Morning. Let me call the Mesa City Council study session of Thursday, April 24th, 2008 to order. We want to change the order just slightly. The Mesa schools will be here later to have some input into item number one. So let's move to item number two, which is to hear a presentation, discuss and provide direction on transportation department budget issues.
Thank you, Mayor. Good morning, Mayor and City Council. My name is Dan Clevenger. I'm the transportation director. Got some staff here with me. I've been transportation director for 12 weeks now, and it's never been more clear to me than now that our employees really take an awful lot of pride in what they do. Tried to get my, I think I've got my arms around the budget a little bit, but I brought some people for some technical help. I've got Elisa Jin, our financial analyst, with me, Lenny Hume and Alan Sanderson, two of my trusty deputies. And so my understanding, this is the last department presentation, so hopefully we wrap it up in fine fashion. So first thing I'll do is I'll go through the transportation budget, and the second half of this presentation is going to be on the transportation bond projects. For most of you, it's just going to be a review. I think you've seen a lot of those slides. And then I do have a lot of slides in there. I apologize. I'm going to try to run through these real briskly. Obviously, feel free to slow me down if you have questions on any of the slides.
Thanks for stopping.
For us, it's not good enough that our customers have a good experience when they're out on our street system. We need them to have a safe experience. This, you might find this interesting. We've got, every day in Mesa, we have over 11 million miles traveled on our streets. So if we don't do our jobs properly, a lot of people notice. Mm-hmm. So that's real important for us. Our mission statement talks about planning, designing, operating, and maintaining a safe and efficient multimodal system, and that's exactly what we strive for. This first slide of the presentation is just a brief org chart. It shows the four responsibility centers. If you look on the far right, I have some shaded areas. That's transit. So today we're going to be talking about only the streets program, not transit. Transit's come before you already. We've identified some cuts with the general fund, so we'll be talking about these work groups. This first pie chart shows our funding source. It's pretty simple. We have two big funding sources. We've got HERF, which is a highway user revenue fund. That's the gas tax that we get back from the state, and then obviously the sales tax. That's the 0.3% dedicated transportation sales tax. So program total is about $58.5 million. Looking ahead for our forecast for HERF, you see it grows from about a little over $39 million up into $44.5 in 2012-13. You'll see a dip there. I'd ask about that. My understanding, that's a reallocation in 2011-12 based on the census. So that's why it dips. Then our other big funding source is the sales tax, and you can see we've been dipping. That's not news to any of you, but transportation feels it as well because we're a part of that. It looks like the expectation here, we talked about the bottom of a trough. Hopefully we'll hit that this fiscal year and things will start to improve a little bit. This ranges from this current fiscal year about a little short of $25 million, and then in 5 years' time, it looks like the projection's getting close to $30 million. Here's the budget breakdown of the program. We identified the bigger items. Our priority for spending is obviously debt service first. We need to do that. That's about $8.8 million or 15% of the budget. And then we move on to operations, our by far our biggest chunk. In operations, those dollars paying for staff, contract services, utilities, materials, equipment, and citywide administrative costs, the overhead as well. And then that smaller piece is about $2 million worth of capital. The biggest chunk of that is $1.3 million in fleet purchases. We've got some large equipment we'll be ordering. And then there's another piece of about $630,000 for our new signals and modifications, for left turn arrows, et cetera. Yes, sir.
Have you analyzed the debt service amount as to the year of expenditure and what it would have been with the construction cost index increasing versus the debt service cost on a municipal rate? Because I know MAG looks at that, and they try to accelerate everything they can from real estate to construction because the construction and real estate prices seem to be completely outpacing what the debt service cost is to accelerate. Is that...
Mayor, I can tell you that I personally haven't been involved in that.
Mayor, that we are, I mean, that's part of really the bond program is to do exactly that, is to accelerate those projects and save about $21 million. That's what the $400 million bond program, or and actually in streets it's $230 million for the bond program.
What this debt service represents is the existing HERF debt service, that amount that's supported by the HERF debt service.
Okay.
The part you're talking about, right, Chris, is what we planned in the program, which would be supported by secondary property tax. That's not part of this program cost.
Well, no, but I'm just, the question about how do you accelerate,
right.
I mean, that's what MAG does, is they take
existing
resources that are in the budget, which like Prop $400, and use that to accelerate a project to save on the inflationary cost.
And on your debt service, what type of acceleration do you do? Is it 1 or 2 years on these, or
and
is
I
it
guess
just
that
a larger?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I was trying to delineate because we have done that in the bond streets bond program we presented. Mm-hmm. I think it was about $22.9 million we're saving with the accelerated five-year program that we were talking about.
Okay.
That's what we've right. done on indexing there. This is existing debt, which we're
these
just
are
managing.
Projects that are already been completed.
It completed, and we're just now going to use the HERF dollars to finish those obligations, and then we'll come back with other programs.
Yeah, usually people will say, well, boy, if you get rid of that debt, you just pay for cash, you do much better. But it last 20 years or whatever, especially the last 5 years, if you had done that, you would have been losing a lot of money because you're better off getting the projects built while they're still affordable as opposed to delaying them and having them way up.
That $22 million was just a five-year program that we were able to leverage that much money.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. That's at the end of the presentation, but that's one of the key components of the proposed bond program is that by accelerating projects, doing them sooner than is scheduled within Prop 400, we save on that inflationary cost. But that's only if we do the $230 million in street projects.
Okay. And that's not intuitive. I mean, it takes a little while to grasp that idea, but when you look at the real estate prices and construction and steel and concrete the last few years, it's just like, wow. When we widened the US 60 and did it for $10 million of money to get that accelerated, we saved a ton of money. That would probably be $40 or $50 million to do the same acceleration, same lane miles today. So I just appreciate the.
And Mayor, Mr. Brady's right. I have a couple slides that'll come later and shows the $21 million for advancing.
Mr. Truitt.
You know, your forecast on HERF monies. What's the latest? You know, I know this year that the state didn't rob the HERF monies, but what's the latest on that in terms of you're showing it continuing to go up? That just being, are we being optimistic?
Mayor, Councilmember Truitt, it was my understanding there was some consideration for reallocating some of the HERF dollars and sending some of that to DPS. I think that's not on the table anymore. I think they're talking about getting some money from Stan, if I'm correct, Mayor. So that's what they're working on right now.
And Mayor, Councilmember Truitt, just to clarify on that point, for the FY08 budget where they did have to make up for the current shortfall, they did elect to take that money from the Stan 2 account, but that does not impact our Stan 1 money that was allocated for the Williams Gateway Freeway, so just wanted to clarify that. It's still a definite danger in the FY09 budget that HERF revenue could be diverted to make up for the spending for the shortfall in the budget.
Big time.
Those that aren't real budget duties are already in FY08, right?
Correct.
So
and that
you're
was
talking
to
about after July 1.
Correct. They the first action that the legislature just approved last week on the budget was to fill the gap, the
right.
funding gap in the,
for current, the
current
fiscal
year. Yes,
right.
Exactly. And then FY09 is still problematic.
That's what I thought. Okay. Well, I just see this optimistic projection of our.
Okay. This is a hopefully the only slide I'm going to have to pause on for a little bit. This wasn't, if you got a draft earlier in the week, this isn't the slide that was in there, so it's probably the first time you're seeing it. What I tried to do is identify some of the boxes, if you will, that to call attention to, just to anticipate a few questions. If you look in the first column of numbers there, and I'm having troubles getting, I'll reach up here with the mouse. That first column shows two yellow boxes. That first one, the $15.6 million. Well, first let me explain this chart if I can. These are our five services in transportation. This first column of numbers shows actual dollars spent in 06-07. Not the adopted budget, actual dollars. If you jump to this column, the third one, that was the adopted budget for the year after that. That's 07-08. And coming back to here is the carryover. That is this third column, plus monies that weren't spent in 06-07, if that's clear, hopefully. And then we've got the forecast, what we expect to spend this fiscal year, 07-08. And then this grayed area is our proposed budget. So let me go back to this first column. We have two areas there that looks like we had a big jump. If you look at this $15.6 million in street maintenance, and you look to the next year's adopted budget, it looks like we jumped almost $9 million. That's not the case. What happened was here is we had budgeted $24.3 million, so it's kind of a modest increase to the third column. What happened there, that's the first year our sales tax started coming in, and we were aligning projects and getting them designed and in queue to build. So we underspent this year. And the remainder that we did not spend, with the exception of about $3 million in carryover, went back to the fund balance. Okay. Same is true in traffic engineering. And by the way, I should mention, we were down at this time in 06-07. We've got about 160 employees. We're down 24 employees during this time. That's another reason that there was some underspending.
You could probably change your slide a little bit and just put carryover column, and it would be easier to do the math. But okay, Vice Mayor.
Dan, let's just make the point that when you said it went to the fund balance, money that came in as dedicated for that street tax did not go to something else. I just want to make that really clear, because when
you're
you say
exactly
fund
right.
balance, I don't want people to think it went,
These are dedicated dollars for the transportation program.
The street tax is on
that. Correct.
Thank you.
And the same is true in traffic engineering. We had we weren't able to spend all our money, and then we had some carryover. The rest went to streets fund balance, okay? In this fourth column, this forecast, we have three boxes under spending. If you look at this column here, the adopted budget, we didn't spend all of our dollars here. The reason for that is we have lots of equipment. These first two areas, traffic operations, we have some big equipment, and environmental activities as well. We've got sweepers and some large equipment. So those aren't in yet, so we haven't spent that money. In traffic engineering, again, that issue is we're down, I think, six people in out of 30-some in traffic engineering. So most of this, not all, but most of that is vacancy savings. The last thing I want to point out on this chart is this box here, the $3.4 million or $3.5 million in administration. The reason that's down, if you look at all the others from the adopted budget, third column to fifth column, all kind of had a gradual increase. That one actually went down in administration. The reason for that is we moved one work group out of there, and so they're not going to be counted in there. They're going to be going to traffic engineering. Okay, so I just want to spend just a little time on there so you understand where our historical budget. Here from 06-07, these are our full-time equivalent positions, our staff members. We had 154.5. We really had a whole person, but someone's time is separated into two different areas. So we don't have any part-time people. So we had, in the budget last year, if you look ahead here, we were able to add four people. We were grateful for getting these four people in 07-08. We're asking this year for four new positions. The field operations coordinator is the second of two such positions. This is part of our staffing plan from a few years back. That work group RC has nine different work groups, and we're doing twice as much expenditures that we've done before. We're looking for another person, and it's not a new level of management because it's already established. It's for Lenny's group, really, to partly to maintain his sanity, but there's a lot of moving parts over there. And we've got nine work groups. We'll have four reporting to one coordinator, or it's actually the title is superintendent, and five to the other. The field operations worker is just a recovery of a position that we lost a few years back in what we called a freeze-thaw. We had a frozen position. When we went to the new budget year, those were all eliminated. So it went away. We were filling that with a temporary overtime. And because we have troubles keeping that filled, because it's hard to get a temporary with their endorsements and their CDLs. And when we do get someone in there and they get experience, we lose them because we can only keep a temporary for a year at a time. So we're asking for we're trying to justify that particular position. The third position we're asking for is a streetlight technician. This would really be the first net increase in over 20 years for streetlights. Yet our streetlights, and you'll see a slide on this, we've got 38,000 streetlights. 20 years ago, we had about 14,000. Well, yes, it's true, we're contracting out more now, but this additional person is going to help us cut into our delays in responding to outages. And you'll see a slide on that later. This last position is a little bit flexible. We're expecting potentially a sweeper from MAG, a new sweeper, and we only have to, it's about a $200,000 piece of equipment, and we only have to pay, I think, 5.8%, if I remember correctly. We don't need this operator if we don't get the sweeper, so it's tied to that. We won't know till June if we get our sweeper. Okay, these are the five services I briefly mentioned before. I'm going to break these all out in a pie chart. You can see where our money goes in each of these services. This type of activities we do in the street maintenance service. Our biggest thing there, obviously, is the almost 33 million square yards of asphalt. Just so you get a sense of scale on this, and I did this before for our Mesa stat, but this is equivalent to a two-lane road from Mesa to New York City. That's what we're responsible for maintaining. In addition to that, of course, we have the landscaping alleys and those other items you see here. Here's our pie chart for the street maintenance service. What I'm going to try to do on these and be consistent is I'm going to pick out the big ones to kind of show you what our expenses are. In this category, we've got about a $27.9 million budget. The biggest one by far is our contracted services. We're contracting out about 80% of our work right now. And so 52% of this makes up asphalt repair. You've heard the ultra-thin bonded wearing course program is in there as well. Landscape maintenance, herbicide and concrete repair, things like that. Next biggest category was commodities. Those are just the things we purchase. Again, that's asphalt, concrete, landscaping. Third highest category is actually our city staff makes up only 14% of the budget. So we're getting a lot of work done in this area. Like Lenny mentioned, I think, last Thursday, we're doing more work painting the streets black than we've ever done before, and we're going to continue with that in the upcoming year. This is an interesting chart. I think we got some help from engineering on this one. Look at these bid costs for asphalt over the years. Now, this is not a evenly spaced timing, so when you see the gaps between the bars, it's not like every 3 months or anything like that. It's just historically since March of 2005, you can see the unit costs per yard of asphalt ranging from $8 going up to close to $15. Now, our current projects were estimated using that peak, because we had no idea that it was going to go down, which is a little ironic that we're getting some really good costs right now, even though fuel costs are up and petroleum's up. People are hungry out there. The contractors are hungry out there, and I think they're willing to make less profit or none in some cases. So the good news on this is we were able to get an extra project done. We bid and awarded 103 lane miles of mill and overlays, and I think that was four projects worth, and we saved $4.9 million just this year in doing that. So that freed up some money to do an extra project we didn't think we were going to be able to do. So in this area, Dobbs Ranch area, in red on this screen, is a project that will have carryovers. Won't be done this year, but it'll be done, I think, this summer yet. So we're happy to be able to squeeze in another project. This is $3.8 million of work that we could not otherwise have done. So that's good news. On to the next work group, traffic operations. This is just signing, striping, and street lighting. You see the numbers there. We've got 59,000 signs out there, 7.7 million feet of striping. That's our yellow and white paint out there that needs to be maintained on a regular basis. And, of course, our street lighting. Pie chart on this one, break down the biggest categories. It's about an $8.5 million budget in the traffic operations service. City staff makes up the largest amount of this at 28%. Next is utilities. This is one of our really big expenses people don't realize. To run our streetlights costs us $2.2 million just to have our streetlights operating on our arterials and our residential streets. Applied overhead then is about 17%. Then commodities are siding, streetlight poles, paint, thermoplastic materials are some of the items that we purchase to keep this work group flowing. Some of the trends and challenges here are biggest issue in streetlights right now, biggest two issues really are probably the wire thefts. You've been hearing about those for a long time. We've lost $250,000 this year, streetlight thefts. That's pretty sad. We're working with PD. We've had some good luck and we've caught some groups. It doesn't mean it stopped things. There's some new legislation as well that limits how much wire you can sell at scrap. And it requires identification and a check to be mailed to an address once you reach a threshold. But just these are some of the things we're trying to do. All of the public agencies in the Valley are dealing with this as well. Also in this area that I've talked about the signing, we've got a lot of signs out in the field that are past their design life. We're embarking on a four-year replacement program, pretty aggressive to try to hit 10,000 or so signs each year. We have a new type of sheeting that lasts 10 to 12 years. The things that are the signs that are out there now lasting only 5 to 7 years. Streetlight repair times are going down a little bit. We're still not where we want to be. We're higher than many of the other valley cities. Right now, we're getting about 68% of our calls, outages done within 15 days. We'd like to get 100% of them done within 15 days, and that's part of the justification for that additional streetlight technician. One other issue is the rusted poles. We've got over 9,000 poles out there slowly rusting. We have a testing program because it's a safety problem. We can't afford to let those fall over on a vehicle, a person, a house, anything. So we're regularly testing those and replacing them as we can. Environmental activities is, I think, the third work group, if I'm keeping track properly. These are just some of the items we take care of. I'll call your attention to the street sweeping down there. We're trying to improve our frequencies out there. We're hitting our residential streets every 5.5 weeks. That's not quite good enough. We're trying to get down to 4 weeks. Similarly, on arterials, we're doing every other week. Our goal for next year is to get down to every week. Again, these address air quality issues. The pie chart for environmental activities, this budget's about $3.3 million total. We've got about 35% coming contracted services for contracted sweeping, contracted vector service, that's the vacuum trucks to keep our storm drains clear, and a little bit on dust palliatives. We've got 14 city staff in this work group, a little less than a third of our budget goes towards that. And kind of a bigger item here, 19% is equipment usage. That's our Vector truck and 6 sweepers that we operate. Some of our accomplishments from this year, we were able to buy a Vector and vacuum truck. Lenny, how much did that cost approximately? It's a big piece of equipment. $350,000 piece of equipment. We're using this almost on a daily basis now. We're keeping our storm drains clean and our dry wells. We won't have flooding implications when we do that. In addition, our pumps that run our retention basins will operate better if we keep that clean. We got 3 replacement sweepers this year. Again, those are about a $200,000 item. We got $189,000 from MAG, essentially buying one sweeper we got for free. So that was replacing 3 sweepers. So you see some of the trends and challenges there. I've mentioned the maintaining our sweeping cycles or actually improving upon those. In traffic engineering, this work group consists of traffic studies and the ITS group, our traffic signals people, and project review. Here's some of the dollars that we spend in there. City staff accounts for 42% of our $8.1 million budget. We've got 21% goes to applied overhead citywide administrative costs. And for commodities, these are purchased primarily for traffic signal equipment. It's our controllers, our cabinets, our poles, our mast arms, and things like that. And then we have 10% of it going towards contracted services. Again, that's generally labor in our traffic signals group. One really great thing, and I call attention to the vice mayor was involved in this one too. I know this is something she's fond of. We got a lot of positive press on this. We got a $57,000 grant awarded to us. And we hit three neighborhoods where we have some of our older residents. And we've addressed their street name signing. It's a big issue for them. These are a lot more legible. They're larger. Again, we got a lot of good press on this. We were able to replace and improve 700 street name signs in three communities and another 100 on Country Club, the overhead signs at our signalized intersection. So it was a real good thing.
Dan, this is a pilot project that the money was seeded by MAG, but the idea was that we would see that it was working well and that as you went forward and replaced other signs in the community that you would replace them with this kind of font. It doesn't just help senior drivers, it helps all drivers.
Exactly. You're right, and thank you for pointing that out. It helps everybody. I can see them better. My kids can see them better. So it's good for everybody.
Well, and we recognize that senior drivers sometimes have something in common with younger drivers in that they need to be able to make decisions farther in advance, and so that visual is really important. But I think you're right, it's important for all of us. So what's the plan on a going forward basis? As you replace signs in the city, I should be asking you, Lenny, shouldn't I? Yeah.
Mayor, Vice Mayor Walters, that's a game plan. As we mentioned earlier, we had 38,000 signs that are beyond their useful life. Most of them are street name signs that we need to replace anyway. So we've been using that Clearview font actually for a little while. So we're using the same font that these new signs have, plus the reflective sheeting. We went to a higher grade sheeting I don't want to use a brand name, but it's much more brighter and lasts longer. So as we replace those signs, we're not putting back the old font or the old sheeting. It's all new stuff, and it's the newer font. So we're covering it with this replacement program.
And Lenny, what happened to us with those signs that you knew I was going to ask the question, right? With our signs that went bad and...
You mean the ones... You didn't like the new colors, the black and white color from green? Oh, darn. What we did is the manufacturer that made those the sheeting material has replaced them, the resheeting material for us. We have it there at the shop. We're replacing them as we come upon them. Instead of going out and trying to pick each one of those out and run all over the city, we're picking them up as we take an area and replace those signs. So we're replacing those signs. The manufacturer paid for the sheeting and the replacement cost, not the actual installation. We take care of that, but the manufacturer took care of the other ones, other costs that were involved.
Thank you.
Some of the things we were able to do in traffic engineering service this year included adding 30 more cameras for traffic monitoring, and those will be done by June. We were able to convert from our older Sonex system to the ICON system. We have two different, and it's going to come up later. We have two different traffic signal systems. One is like a 1980s generation that's no longer supported, so we really need to get those converted over. You might have heard me talk about these before. We need to get those converted over to the newer system, which allows us much better monitoring and better communication using fiber. And we added more fiber optics, and our UPS devices out at 30 intersections help us when we have an outage. We can run our intersection for 4 to 5 hours using those, and we have those at our critical intersections. So let me just point out two things on this page. I have some concerns in traffic engineering, technical staffing, particularly in ITS. We've got 6 vacancies right now. We've struggled a little bit hiring people. We've just recently completed a large job study with personnel, and we think that we're in alignment now to start recruiting. As a matter of fact, we've opened up 4 positions, ITS technicians. It's very important that we have those people in the field maintaining our system and troubleshooting to keep everything operating properly in our ITS group. A couple other items, LRT-BRT, that's the light rail and the bus rapid transit. They're going to have a new generation of signal controllers out along that corridor, which is brand new for us and brand new for everybody in the valley. And there's a little bit of learning curve. We're going to be working on that. Our staff's getting up to speed on that. On to administration is our support services generally. We've got about 24 employees, I think, in this work group. Obviously, the largest cost there is city staff. That's 68% in support. Commodities office supplies and things like that. One of the big activities in the admin group is the what's going on in Southeast Mesa, the Mesa Gateway Strategic Development Plan. And in Mayor, I wanted to clarify something. I just didn't have a better place to put it. This South Canal payback. Just want to clarify this issue. We've talked, and I think it's been some misunderstanding. I think I finally asked the right question. We have incurred about $177,000 in design costs. We talked about we have to pay money back. The money's been paid. I just want to make that clear. So we had to pay design costs internally and externally. So that's done. It's just we're not eligible to get reimbursed the 155 because the project's not moving forward. So hope that clears up that. And that was the South Canal project, the first phase that met with some resistance from the neighborhood.
Had that gone forward, then what would have happened?
Had that gone forward, we would have been eligible for $155,000 reimbursement for design and then additional monies for the actual construction.
All right. But the $155,000 was painted and paid in advance? Or?
No. Mayor, what happened was we paid $177,000 to get this facility designed. Okay, we eat that money. It's gone. We paid for that design service. We just don't get reimbursed for those dollars because we didn't build the project.
So, Mayor, you could say we paid, well, if they pay in advance, it's just we're not being reimbursed for it.
Correct.
Otherwise, we were spending that money with the anticipation that that would be reimbursed to the city. Now we will not be reimbursed for that city.
Correct.
And we'll have to take that off as a receivable to the city. We've already funded it, but we will not get reimbursed down the road. But it's not as if we're having to write them back a check.
Correct. And I think that was, some people believe that was the case, and we've got it straightened out.
Because the check had already been sent.
Essentially, we paid for it. Yeah, we paid for the check. We sent the check to ourselves, I guess.
Correct.
So it's 170, I thought it was like $500,000. I thought it was more than that.
Well, there's other design costs for phase two. It was over 400. Phase two is still on the books. I'm sure we're going to have some discussion with the neighbors as well, but phase one and phase two were designed kind of concurrently, but 177 of it applied to the first phase, is my understanding.
Have we spent funds on phase two?
Design funds, yes.
How much?
It would be, engineering might know better, but it's probably about the same, maybe a little bit more. That section might be a little longer, so comparable.
That we've already spent?
Yes.
So, Mayor, then you add the two together.
And then it was, a number I remember was over 400,000.
So we are not going to get reimbursed for those funds if we don't go forward with phase
correct.
Two.
That's
which,
correct.
Problematically, we're skipping a whole section. Right. The question is, do you skip a section and then go to another section and create a pathway without really any
connectivity
or trailheads, I suspect, too. So.
That's right. And Mayor, another option is because the intent was to go basically from McKellips all the way out to Power Road. Another option is to go to Power and work backwards and provide some connected facility. It's an option.
Well, would MAG even fund it if it wasn't a unified, connected pathway?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, Mayor, you got to start somewhere with the path, and we can't afford to build 6 and 8 miles. This was going to be an 8-mile-long corridor. I believe they would if we could show them that we could follow through and get the project done. You know, whether that means selling it to the adjacent neighbors or having folks speak on behalf of it, I think MAG would fund another segment.
Okay. Well, I've seen lots of other projects in Chandler and Gilbert and other places that are moving forward, so I'm sure there's lots of competition for the money.
Yes, sir.
I just think the signal that we sent is that we're not interested in cart paths. Hopefully we can overcome that and explain that it's just one little area and that's called Lehigh, and they got their way. It's something for the new council to consider, especially with the design that we've already done. It would be terrific, in my opinion, to get something that goes out towards the Granite Reef Diversion Dam. But
right, Mayor, we're very much in favor of it too, but we got to have cooperation, and we have to certainly have council support as well.
So do you need additional council direction to see about proceeding with the $200,000 that's already been designed?
Yes, we do, Mayor. Okay. I didn't know what the best timing was to come back on this, but we will need direction because we've spent some money and MAG has expectation that we'll be building this project. If we're not going to be, we need to let them know.
Because for MAG's purposes, it's that they're holding up, the dollars are being reserved for the full project. And what the issue is for the city is, in addition to not being reimbursed for funds and efforts already made, is releasing the project. MAG's going to start getting anxious about either drawing down on the funds or releasing the project so that Chandler and Gilbert and Scottsdale can extend their project. So
right, and they won't release the project until it goes to bid.
If the new $42 billion comes through, there's a whole lot more money in for pedestrian type of connections too. So If we are out of the running, there's going to be a lot of money that's not coming to Mesa that's going to other communities for secondary routes such as working on the canal. So I think it'll be a great discussion for wouldn't mind taking it back up. I just don't know if we have enough time. So it's probably something that's going to get shifted over to the new council.
I think it probably will, Mayor.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you. Now, that's the end of the transportation budget package. I can take questions now, or I can run through the bond package. Again, this will be just kind of a refresher. So I'll continue if that's okay, Mayor. Or?
You've had some slides in the past. I know you have a program that shows the age of your streets and what's going to be done. With the citizen vote to have some dedicated sales tax go towards roads, are we getting back to, I forgot what the program is, but can somebody brief me on your asphalt so that we're not kind of pay me now, pay me later type of thing was expressed. How are we doing with funding that you have going into the division?
Mayor Hawker, that's a good question. And we're actually, our game plan through the implementation plan was having set aside $9 million an increase with inflation each year to dedicate to overlays and reconstructions, or mostly overlays. This is the first year we actually got an opportunity to identify all those projects and get them out to bid and get the work done. What we see, you're talking about our pavement management system that we've been tracking for over 20 years, our asphalt. Mm-hmm. What, along with our Compass performances that we put together, we're showing our goal is to get a percentage that we can maintain every year in a good, excellent level. The streets below that, we can maintain it every year. We're looking at a 7, as I mentioned before, we had probably 10 to 12 years return. It's going to take about 10 to 12 years to get caught up to where we should be. And we can see the trend from going down and continuing going down, what we consider the minimum condition, pavement condition, going down to leveling out and working its way back up. And our goal was 10 to 12 years, and that's where we're setting. It's doing real well.
Are you playing some catch-up? I know this, the whole Dobson Ranch area was, mill and overlay?
Yeah.
That's expensive as opposed to some of your other options.
Right. Well, we're doing a blend of everything we can, trying to get the best out of our dollar. The ultra-thin bond, the wearing course, the project we've been playing with, again, takes half as much asphalt. So if asphalt prices are high, do you get the design life, or do you get life out of that product that you do a conventional overlay? In the Dobson area, we would initially looked at a complete reconstruct because there's a lot of moisture underneath the Dobson street structures out there. I'm not going to say the lakes leak, but something leaks out there. but it's a lot of moisture. So we're doing a conventional overlay in some of those areas where we need the more structural part of that. So we look at each one of the sections of road and identify which is the best product. We're going to do some ultra-thin in Dobson and some other areas too, so just to buy us some time. But we're constantly mixing and mending and putting products together and applications together to best fit the surface out there.
Okay. I just some of the older streets, you can see where they've actually crowned because you keep overlaying and overlaying, and eventually you got right. A foot of asphalt there,
right.
And it's in, like...
In the Dobson area, that's, if you remember, that was built in the mid-'70s, late-'70s. Its cycle is up for its 25 to 30-year replacement. That hasn't had any overlays, but it's had many years of surface treatments, crack seals and slurry seals. So it would start developing a little bit of a crown in them. But yeah, the streets that start building to get a higher crown, we'll do a complete mill instead of just an edge mill, try to get that profile back down to a manageable level.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mayor, I'll try to hit the transportation bond package about 10 minutes. Again, this should mostly refresher.
Tom?
Before Mayor asked his question, Dan, you indicated that this was the end of the transportation department budget issue discussion. And I'm just curious whether a discussion of the bond package is appropriately agendized.
Yeah. Councilmember Rawls, actually, I had that same question. I wasn't, I guess I would ask Dan, is this going into monies for your budget as opposed to new projects? And is this just the bond package that's up for election in November?
This is the bond package that's up for election in November.
But it's all part of the funds that go through from the sales tax component and this will affect his operations, and there's a relationship from the ability, and we don't have to go, really it was just a reminder of what it is. We weren't really going to go into a lot of discussion, but it is integral when you run the, yeah, no, when you run the.
He said he was done with the budget presentation.
Oh, yeah.
Another topic, so we're only agenda.
That's a good question.
I just was picking when up you look on what
at,
he said.
Yeah, no, that's fine. And you look at the way the sales tax comes in, the HERF dollars come in, and the way they go out related to street maintenance projects, funds available from those capital dollars to fund city share, signals, and even other capital projects that are in the bond program, there's a matching component to that. So really we were just bringing it back as a reminder, so it's if it's not appropriate, we can move it. We just wanted to bring back some of the highlights of that discussion.
Scott?
I'm just looking at advance of the slides. 33 through 36 at least look to have implications directly for the budget. Maybe the city attorney wants to look at those. Maybe we can at least discuss those in context of RPT projects, Prop 400 monies, and federal contributions, and how much money that's going to bring into the budget.
I guess my recommendation would be, I haven't seen this, so I don't know what information is included. If it goes with your budget for the next fiscal year, then I think it's appropriate. If it is going beyond that, it's probably best to bring it back under a separate agenda item.
And I have no problem with discussing it today. It was just, I sort of sit here as a second lawyer at the table, and when I see things going, and if Dan hadn't said the sentence that he said, I probably wouldn't have raised it, because I can make the same arguments that Chris just did. And I think, if, you know, given what we've heard, it's probably appropriate to go forward, and I just wanted to clarify it. I just try to keep us on the straight and narrow occasionally.
You will be adopting a CIP plan, and this is their five-year CIP plan. So this is all part of their, you got an 08-09 budget you will be adopting, which is a significant part of their capital improvements program, but you will also be adopting the CIP plan, which is part of the budget for the five-year program.
I think unless it would be a hardship, I think it would be best to bring this back and agendize it under the bond package.
Mayor, that's fine with us. I would just ask to bring the budget and the bond package together. So.
I disagree, because that's all part of this.
Right. We'll clear the agenda item and make sure it's spelled out better next time. All right, let's thank you. Let's move on to the, is Mesa Schools, did they? All right, let's go to hear presentation, discuss and provide direction on the Mesa Arts Center adult classes.
Morning, Mayor. Morning, Council. We're back to just follow up on a previous discussion we had a few weeks ago regarding the Mesa Arts Center adult art classes. There were a number of questions, and we wanted to clarify some of those, answer some of the questions, and show you how we would address the shortfall in this financial year, and hopefully provide you enough information to provide direction not only for the rest of this year, but also discuss the next year class continuation. So the slides just very briefly summarize what you have in your report. On slide one, just a quick rundown of the background of this issue. As of December last year, we reported in the Mesa stat at that time that our actual cost recovery at that time of adult art classes were 102% for the first 6 months of the year, so things looked okay at that point. We then looked at the, we keep looking at recovery as the year goes on, and in March we saw that the drop of the spring registrations would bring the actual cost recovery at that point to 88% in our annual year-end projection to 71%, which is what we reported to this council at that stage. We think at this stage we've revised somewhat our actual and projection as of mid-April. We now think our year-end projection will be at 77%, provided the summer classes continue. If the classes are canceled, the cost recovery would drop to 71%. So that's just briefly where we are and how we got to where we did in terms of the class and how we monitored progress through the year in terms of cost recovery. The next slide just addresses what we think we can do and what we propose to do for the rest of this year in terms of adult art classes. And again, it's just a very brief recap of our projections as at this time. There have been the possibility of cutting some expenditures for the remainder of the year in these programs, which will, as I've said, increase our cost recovery projection to 77%, and our revised expenditure for the whole year for adult art classes will be $395,000. On the revenue side, our updated projections look like we'll end up with a revenue of $304,500, including summer classes. That leaves us with a shortfall of about $90,500 to get to 100% cost recovery in this financial year. We propose that we address that shortfall in two ways. One, we have been able to identify some savings in the youth classes to the tune of $46,000, which we can shift across from the Mesa Arts Center Foundation contribution to youth classes would be able to go to adult art classes. The foundation has approved this. They have approved to widen their funding mandate to fund education in general and not just youth education. This will not affect the youth classes, as I said, because the cuts we've been able to identify for the rest of this financial year will not affect what they will be doing for the rest of the year. They'll just get along until next year. And then the balance of $44,500 would come from vacancy savings we've identified in the marketing area due to the fact that we've had some vacancies we haven't filled at this point and don't project to fill within the next few months. So that would be how we would propose to deal with the shortfall in this financial year. And just a point to emphasize that this all assumes summer classes go ahead and the summer class registration starts tomorrow. We obviously would prefer to not have to register students and then have to cancel classes after that. So just a point of timing that is playing into this whole issue as well that I wanted to alert you of. There's a chart to isolate the summer classes just to clarify exactly what that would do in terms of the recovery. What we've done is we've looked at the 9-week summer class season, and we have in the first column said if we do the summer classes as planned, the expenses would be $35,800 in fixed costs and mainly the 3.7 FTE. Then part-time teachers, temporary teachers, and other costs related to summer classes would be $27,750. We would have some supplies of $2,500 against a revenue of $66,000. If we cancel the classes, the fixed costs would continue. The $35,800 would continue. We've had some expenses in some advanced marketing. We've already marketed some of the summer classes in, for instance, the Time Out magazine, and we've had a little bit of upfront cost to $2,500. So even if we cancel the classes, that cost would remain because that's already out there. And of course, the revenue would be affected to zero. Earlier I said revenue would 66. The revenue for the classes would be 45. That's the third column. That 45 is a modest increase of last year's actual revenue was $42,000. Without MCC doing any classes because we were not able to finalize the contract last year in time for the summer. This year the contract is in place and they plan to have students. We don't know how many, but we've only projected a $4,000 revenue from that source and similar revenue from last year from our adult education. So we think it's a very achievable target and conservative. So the bottom line is if we cancel the classes, it will cost us $17,250 more than it would if we do the summer classes. And then the last slide is just to show some of our thinking for the way ahead on the assumptions that we do the summer classes. For next year, we think based on some modest projections in increased revenue and a very 5% increase in expenditure, that we would get to a cost recovery target of 85%. based on projected expenses of $415,000 and a revenue of $360,000. And then beyond that, we will continue to strive towards 100% cost recovery as much as we can by working within the current model, but continuing to look at new initiatives, which you mentioned in the previous presentation, to make that recovery more as high as we can get it, or as close to 100% as we can. If there are questions, I'd be happy to address those.
Questions? Tom?
Johan, the summer program looks like it's, if you just proceeded, you'd have $66,000 in expenses and $45,000 in revenue. That's about a 66% cost recovery. Well, is that my reading that right?
Summer classes would be about a 66, yeah. But that's, the summer brings our annual cost recovery down at this point in adults, because the summer is not peak time for adult classes. The youth classes are very busy in the summer.
Is all the, because this crosses fiscal years?
Yes.
Does all the revenue that get received get put into the 07-08 yes. year, and then all half the expenses get put in the 08-09 year?
It straddles the 2 years, and the practice has been so far to put all the revenue in the months that we receive it, but the expenses go across the 2 years. So it's a swings and roundabout.
So you sort of...
It's front-loaded.
You sort of start 08-09 with a little bit of a hole because
yes.
you've got,
in terms of the
you've
summer
got expenses but no revenue to offset it.
But that happens every year. So it's,
I understand that happens.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
I'm trying to think both
no, that's
in terms
correct.
Of this,
that's correct.
This, whether we continue or what, and what
right.
we do about next
American
year.
Councilman, and that's why, for the sake of a presentation, we just presented it as a whole program as opposed to trying to do that way. That was just too confusing.
Yeah.
So.
And are the 3.7 FTEs... all teachers, or the administrators, or
the we have two full time one FTEs that are overseers and managers of the North and South studios. They teach for about 75% of their time, and for the rest of the time, they manage, maintain, and oversee the investment we have there. And then we have a 0.6, which is another teacher. And the rest are administrative people like registration, which also take registration for youth classes and all sorts of other activities. So it's the portion of their time that goes to adult classes okay. and so on.
The $46,000 transfer from the Mac Foundation, when you were here before, my memory is not perfect again, but I think you had a 90 and a 95% cost recovery figures for the youth classes for 07-08.
Yes.
Taking and a chunk of that recovery or cost recovery was the contribution from the Mac Foundation. How do you lose that $46,000 that Mac was going to give to, or the foundation was going to help cover the youth classes, and transfer it over to the adult classes and not have that impact the numbers for the youth classes?
Both the youth programs had projected to have expenditures ongoing through the rest of the year related to their last production in StageWorks and related to their classes, which would have put them in a position to have some supplies going into the next year. We've just frozen all those expenditures. They will be able to get through the year in a not ideal way, but we're in that kind of time anyway, and they can make it work. Some of those expenses will roll over into next year and start the year, so they might have to get some supplies that they're really running out of now. And it's just really stretching the budget.
Yeah, okay, because even if you can come to this year, because you're freezing these expenses that you were going to spend in 07-08, you're going to have to catch up and probably have more expenses early in the year for 08-09. What is that going to do to the cost recovery number for 08-09 for the youth classes, particularly if the foundation is going to be supporting both youth and adult classes?
Just two responses, Councilor Rawls. The model of the cost recovery and financial performance models of all the classes are getting better as time goes on. If we continue to be using sharp pencils, and this is our full intent. So I don't believe that we could compare year on year and not allow for the possibility that we will become more efficient We will drive revenue up. We have found ways that our StageWorks programs are more effective at box office. We're learning which productions work, which don't. We're still in a learning phase and a new program. So our slightly buoyant look at year-on-year doing better is based on a confidence that we will constantly perform better from year to year, both in efficiencies in terms of savings, but more importantly in driving revenue. So I understand for a program that might have been around for 20 years and suddenly we can take 46,000 out and say nothing's going to change, that would be unrealistic. But we're in a growth phase and an efficiency growth phase quite strongly. And I think that's why we're confident that they can take this kind of hit without passing that pain on to next year.
Okay. Thank you. Those are all the questions I have this time.
Okay. Other questions?
Not a question so much, but appreciate, Johan, your concise presentation. Four slides, get to the point, cover what's necessary. But I appreciate the work you're doing over there in working on those efficiencies and getting the recovery, looking for ways, different angles, so that we can achieve that recovery, because that was the directive that we gave, was to keep raising that cost recovery and to achieve the goals we have. And I really appreciate your efforts and your staff. Please pass that along.
I will. Thank you.
Vice Mayor?
Thank you, Mayor. I looked at this item and it says, hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction. I appreciate your forthrightness in the last presentation and in this presentation. And as many of you know, I agreed with Council Member Rawls on principle, although I disagreed with him in terms of how we should go forward. I felt that he was correct, that when the council gives direction, we should follow that direction, absolutely. So I appreciate you bringing this back. I'd like to make a motion that we approve moving ahead with the summer classes. I think that the direction that you are going is the correct direction for the use of this wonderful facility that we put together. Your staff has worked very hard, and to cut this off right now would have, in my opinion, exactly the opposite impact of the direction that we want to go. You have been moving in the correct cost recovery direction. We need to give you additional time to get to that place, but I think that the work that you have done has been magnificent. And as a result, I also have cookies in the kitchen that I made. So
now you're talking.
No, everybody. But if you're allergic to nuts, stay away from the stuff today.
Okay, there's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Yeah. Other discussion? Tom?
You know, particularly with the idea of it's going to cost us, but we're not going to lose quite as much if we go forward as if we cut. It puts us in a box, but... I guess there's three reasons why I won't support the motion. One is, you know, there's an old saying that says, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. The concept of being fooled three times is so remote that the author of that saying didn't even bother including it. So, you know, I know what you're doing, and I think there's you use the phrase sharp pencils, and I join Kyle and Claudia, and you know, as I did last time, in commending the staff and you and all the effort that you're making, and you probably are going in the right direction. I just don't have the confidence that the sharp pencil, smoke and mirrors, transfers, whatever you call it, is genuinely going to get to 100% cost recovery. Secondly, and as I told you this morning, I was going to say that we had a discussion on the phone a couple of weeks ago where you indicated to me that you did not think that with the current model, 100% cost recovery was reachable. And I respect the fact that you told me that so bluntly and honestly. But I also believe you. And third, it comes back to a philosophical issue. I just don't believe that adult art classes is an appropriate function of government, and there shouldn't be any tax dollars used to support it. So I will oppose the motion.
Okay. Dennis.
Thank you, Mayor. I just appreciate Vice Mayor's motion, and I hope the council passes it. I'm speaking now in my role as chair of the Mesa Arts Center Foundation, and we as a foundation believe that the education component of the center is truly critical, and that's where we're allocating our dollars to and our fundraising efforts towards. If you think about it, the classes at the center for many years were the spine of the Mesa Arts Center. 30 plus years of thousands of people in our community participating. And that's a key component of why and how that center got built. We as a foundation think it's important to continue on with the classes, to continue with a campus that's active every day of the year. As a foundation, we're a little selfish. We like the we like programs going on at the center because the foundation store is open and we sell things to help raise more money for the center when it's open. And canceled classes don't help us in that regard. So if you approve this, this will certainly help our bottom line, which is working to help your bottom line. So from the foundation, we're very supportive of what you're doing. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments on this one? All right, we have a motion and second for approval of continuing with the adult programs as outlined this morning. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Nay. It passes in 5-2.
Mayor, can I get some clarification? Because there's really been two items that have been discussed here in this presentation. One, we wanted to give this council an opportunity to make the decision about whether or not to continue the summer classes, which I took that motion to just now to relate to that specifically. The next question, though, that is included, though, that we that needs to be addressed and is related to the proposed budget, because this is really how it all started a year ago, is with the idea that in our proposed budget, we have the assumption that we continue the adult classes, but as you see here today, even our anticipation is that that will not be 100% cost recovery. I just need to get a clarification if the motion includes, they will continue to include adult classes in the proposed budget, recognizing that it will be less than 100%, or what other options there might be. I just want to make sure that's clear.
Mayor, I wanted those motions separate, but okay, I'd like to make the motion that we continue with it in the budget. I will tell you that the decision about that ultimately will not rest with this council, because we're going to set a cap in terms of what people can spend, and underneath that cap they can move it around. So if the new council wants to come in and change that, Chris, as you and I both know, they can do that. So I'd like to keep it in the budget, and so I will make a motion to that effect.
Second.
So the motion then is not to target 100% cost recovery, but outlined here today.
Exactly. As outlined here today, they have made great strides in that direction. I think they ought to be able to continue in that direction. I think it would be a shame to take a facility that the taxpayers have paid for and has such a future to it when it's in its infancy like this and kill it. And I fear that that's exactly what we would do. So that's why I'm making the motion.
That's the point exactly. Moving in that direction, if it were to be going in the opposite direction, then I'd really have an issue with it. But as long as we're moving towards that as much as we can and optimizing opportunities, working to raise that as we go forward, I think we need to continue because we are moving in the right direction.
Okay, I'm going to continue to not support it. I want 100% cost recovery for adult programs. And this target does not get us there, in my opinion, without shifting money around from foundations and stuff to subsidize it in another manner. I like the facility, but I would be willing to pay whatever it costs to make sure that it was 100% my expense if I'm taking classes there. And the youth is something else. But for adult programs, I can't go that way to say that we should be subsidizing people in Mesa and Scottsdale and Tempe to come here for classes. So that's why, philosophically, I'm more with aligned with Tom on this one. Tom.
I guess I have one question about the motion and then one comment. What we're doing today, then, is this motion is directing staff to include in the budget for adoption by the new council the concept of having adult classes at the Art Center.
Mayor, Councilman,
with an 85% recovery.
Yeah, I just wanted to be clear.
Right, that no, and I appreciate that.
In the proposed budget, right now we're carrying forward the assumption that it's in, but if just because of the discussions, I don't want the council not to know where it sits in the proposed budget, and so yes,
and I appreciate the clarity, and I think it would be a good thing if we could figure out some way to more accurately, both for the youth classes and the adult classes, break out the classes by fiscal year. You know, maybe have a 4-week session in June and another session that starts in July, so that you can actually accurately track from fiscal year to fiscal year the revenue and the expenses. I don't know if that's possible, but again, I'd look at it. As long as you're trying to be efficient on everything else, think about that. And as far as the Arts Center and the infancy argument, there's a wonderful facility there. If there's a market for art classes, then there's nothing wrong with the private sector developing those art classes and renting the space from the Arts Center, just like the Southwest Shakespeare Company rents space for their performances and other entities rent space for their performances. And it doesn't have to be offered by government is the point. If there's a market for them, then the market will satisfy it, and we can still have it full. They can still be buying things at the shop. It just doesn't have to be underwritten by the taxpayer. So I will, again, vote no on this motion.
Okay. I have a motion and second. Any other discussion? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Nay. Again, a 5-2 vote with Councilmember Rawls and myself voting nay. Does pass. All right.
Mayor, could I just make a comment, if you don't mind, at this point, just to say thank you very much for all the comments you made, specifically those directed to my staff. They really are everything that you said they are. They've done great work over so many years, and it's based on my confidence in their ability that I know that we'll continue to do to move in the right direction. And I just wanted to say that I have the full respect for any opinions to the contrary. You know that. You both know that individually. We respect all this debate. We appreciated that, and it just makes us stronger. So thank you for that.
Mesa Schools? All right. Let's hear a presentation discussing provide direction on the recommended location of the last of the initial quality of life funded pool projects.
Great. Good morning, Mayor, Council members. I'm Red Evans, the Parks, Recreation, and Commercial Facilities Director, and I have with me Steve Hogan, who is the Athletic Director for Mesa Public Schools. Back in September in 2007, we were here before this council to receive direction on the renovation project of Keno Junior High School as well as Rhodes Junior High School, and we are happy to report that both those projects, based on your direction, are moving forward. Keno currently is under demolition right now, and the Rhodes project is 90% drawn and should be starting here shortly. At that same time in meeting, staff was asked to go back and work with Mesa Public Schools in identifying a possible location for an east side pool, which would realize the final balance of our quality of life sales tax for these aquatic types of facilities. So we're here today to discuss the proposed site as well as seek your approval to begin discussions to finalize the details of the scope, the budget, and the timeline of this east side pool. So with that, I'll go ahead and go to the drawing, and I believe you have this in your packet as well. And to orientate yourselves, north is up at the top, south, east, and west. This is Crisman Road, and this is Skyline High School. We have our Skyline Park up here on the north portion of the property. You received in your packet as well a letter from Mesa Public Schools from their superintendent that has identified this particular site on the southwest corner of Skyline High School as a proposed location for a pool. In that discussion and in that same letter, we have also identified the city's basin 111, which is 18 acres, and up on the top of that basin is an area that's currently undeveloped that we could potentially turn into a proposed joint-use parking lot, which would not only benefit the school for their baseball facility, but would also allow joint use or access to this park, in which we do have a soccer field and two small ball fields.
Scott, do you have a question?
I do, Rick. I like this site for my district. What happened to Smith? I thought, is this a different pool, or is this? Did we decide that this was the better location? Who decided that?
And I'll let Steve Hogan can probably talk from the Mesa Public Schools standpoint of why that site was chosen from their end.
In working with the parks, and I caught a few different things. I know the circles that you had for I forget what you call them.
Service circles.
Mm-hmm. Skyline seemed to encompass a little bit better area there. It gives us a bigger opportunity to hopefully build a bigger pool, similar to the pool that we're putting out at Keno. That way we can have two Olympic-sized pools that would not have been able to have been done at Smith. Also, again, Skyline's a little bit more centrally located for that area that's included even south. That may not be Mesa Public Schools, but it is City of Mesa. So Skyline just seemed to be a little more centrally located on the eastern portion.
Okay, so that works for the school district as well, and you get a bit better pool for that location.
Yes.
That you could get in Smith. Okay, thank you.
Vice Mayor?
The other thing is this council gave some direction about looking at service territories based on high school boundaries as opposed to junior high boundaries. We think if we'd known 25 years ago what we know now, that's probably the model that we would have gone with. So, Steve, I really appreciate your being willing to look at the Gilbert Public Schools attendance area as well, because as you pointed out, that is City of Mesa, and I think that this will also be able to feed those kids better. So I think it's a good location. Thank you.
Thank you.
Kyle?
And if I understand correctly, the footprint availability at Smith did not lend itself to a reasonable size facility like we're talking about here down at Skyline.
Correct. It would have been very, very tight.
Very cramped.
Parking would have been an issue, and especially with the expanded, what we're hoping to put on, if we can come up with additional funding on the school's part to help make it a bigger site, which I think is very important for what we're trying to do.
Thank you.
Mike?
Steve, the letter from superintendent indicates the name of the school directly south is Superstition High School. That's a charter school?
It's a Mesa Public School focus school.
Okay.
So is it part of Mesa Schools.
And it was identified on the map as Boulder Canyon High School. Is that just an error, or is that another name? Or
Mayor and Councilmember Whalen, I believe that was the former name, so this map hasn't changed since they changed the name. Since they changed the name of the school.
So
apologize for that.
That entire land, other than the basin parking lot area, is owned by MPS, Mesa Public Schools.
I believe, I don't know if you have a colored map, but where I'm pointing here, over the purple is Mesa Public Schools property. The green is the City of Mesa property.
And what's the property to the west?
The property to the west is basically private development.
Okay. It's already built now?
Well, partial buildings are there, that's completed.
All of this area Councilmember Jones.
I just wanted to make sure I knew what we're talking about. Thank you.
Let me ask one other question while we're kind of opening this up. There are a couple of other pools that are potentially to be closed because they may not survive for a couple of years. And there's no funding source left in the quality of life. Was the discussion about building this pool, a new one, versus renovating the existing pools as opposed to closing them, was that also a topic of a discussion? And what was the conclusion on that discussion?
Mayor and council members, if I could, I'll go to this map to address that question. And we have looked and researched that topic quite extensively. When we look at the City of Mesa as a whole and we identify what we call these service circles, we feel that we are adequately addressing the needs in West Mesa with the addition of the roads renovation, with Carson, which is up and operating currently, and then with the expansion of the Keno project, which will not only be a competitive 50-meter pool, but will also have a play features and a play type of amenity pool. So when we look at this half of the city, we will now have three state-of-the-art facilities, and the service circles, as they are drawn here with two-mile radiuses, have quite a bit of overlap covering that area. When we look at our attendance figures and the popularity of certain pools, Brimhall is our pool that historically sells out and is at capacity first, and that is the case this season when we opened registration on the 18th of this month. there are swimming lessons and programs that are already completely sold out this early in the season. Fremont is the second used pool and followed by Shepherd. So the demand that we're seeing is obviously out here in this southeast region. Thus, to address your question, Mayor, we feel that this pool and this site will take some pressure off of these pools, and yet we've addressed the need by having these three other pools, new pools, that would, if we were to have to close either these Taylor, Mesa Junior, or Powell, that we would have adequate pools in those areas to accommodate those participants.
All right, thank you. Kyle.
Rhett, what is the usage on Parkway Pool? What's the availability and usage of that?
Mayor and Councilmember Jones, Parkway Pool is an indoor facility that's primarily used for adaptive needs. So it's we consider it a citywide use because anyone that has a special need, whether they're in West Mesa, East Mesa, utilizes that facility because of its accessibility for ADA and so forth. So that's primarily what it's used for.
Well, it's not one that's just open to the public, period, typically.
I don't know if they do.
It's focused more on the ADA use.
Darla could answer that. I know that
Councilman Jones, Parkway is an indoor facility, and we do open it to the public, but it isn't for public swim. It's a hot water facility. It's kept at 90 degrees, so people with disabilities can come in with the ticket, and it's public swim for them, but in a very specialized setting. It's handicap accessible through ramps and chair and steps. I'm not sure if
I know when it was initially made, the school was for special needs.
Correct.
And that's why the pool was part of the facility. And now that the school has changed its focus, the pool still exists, but we're still using it for special needs folks.
We are, and the schools are as well. They actually will transport their special needs kids during the school day and use the facility. We do also swimming lessons there for the younger children because the warm water helps it's very conducive to the five-year-olds and younger because they get cold quite easily. So we do operate it year-round with swimming lessons with the adaptive opportunities for rehabilitation.
Okay, thank you.
Tom?
I'll make a motion that we approve the recommended site at Skyline High School.
Second.
Motion and second. Right. Further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
All right. Great. Thank
Very
you.
Good.
Thank you.
Number four, discuss and provide direction on materials and information needed to make recommendations on the preparation of the fiscal year 08-09 annual budget.
Mayor, what we would like to do is if there's some, we have a list of questions that we're still getting the responses to, everything from overtime budgets and fuel costs for vehicles that we'll bring forward next week. But we wanted to, if there was an opportunity for the council, if there were some additional questions that are just a clarifications that needed to be provided, we'd like to get that maybe today so that we could have the time to prepare to start bringing back those responses and getting that direction for next week.
Okay, Tom.
One of the things that I'd like to see is if we use on the police officer pay package, I'd like to see how much money we would have available if we did a 5% in July and a 4% rather than a 5% in January, as well as a 5 and a 3 and a 5 and a 2. I mean, I'm not talking about the COLA. Still would do the COLA in January, but I'd like to see how much each percentage would give us down from basically from 7 to 10. Because there are some things that I think I might like to fund, particularly the I'm concerned about the overtime issue with the police department as to how real that number is going to be, setting aside the obviously unnatural event, but you know, I'd like to see give them a little flexibility to plug that money back into overtime if necessary rather than having it as already budgeted elsewhere. And then also the response vehicles, the
TRV.
The TRVs is something that I'm not very happy about cutting in a flung. And anything that I would want to move any of this police officer salary package money to would only be into other forms of public safety. So I'm thinking the TRVs, maybe a little hedge against the overtime number, but obviously need to know what each percentage gives me in terms of dollars available.
Vice Mayor.
I'd like to talk about the TRV thing as well, and this is my question. Is there any other model for maintaining it that we can have enough hours? I'm looking at about a $700,000 potential and wondering if that will give you, if there's a way of modeling around that target number. If you could think about that, Chris.
Okay, we can do that. One of the things that we'll follow up with next week is one of the previous discussion we had about the TRVs was looking at the possibility of, like we do for transporting individuals for emergencies, is also associating a fee with that. Now, I don't know that, I don't want to represent the council that we have the time and the ability to set up that fee now so that we recover all that cost for next year. But if we can come up with some one-time funds for next year, and really remember, this pilot, it was a pilot program only funded for next year. But if we can fund it for the one-time dollars for next year, that during next year, if the council would give us the direction, we could look at the possibility and set up the processes to collect for the service of the TRVs during that period of time. So that may be something we want
to
explore.
I'd love to see that come back too. Okay. You know, it's this council that actually worked with our provider Southwest Ambulance to get reimbursement on things that the city didn't used to get reimbursed on. I mean, they now stock, they supply our ambulances, all of those things that used to come out of the city budget. So I'm very open to that sort of model and would love to see that come back as well, Chris. Thank you.
I'm not sure that it can happen quickly, but at some point I think we need to look at the whole public safety, fire and police employment package and switch that for new hires from a 20-year program to a 30-year. I don't think that if it needs legislative action, then I think that discussion sometime needs to take place, because that those public safety costs and retirement costs after 20 years with life expectancies and everything else, I think that that model is defective and needs to be changed. So, not that it's going to work in this budget cycle, but so many of the aspects of our budget are predicated on 20 years and drop and everything else, and we're not going to the fundamental issue that public safety personnel should be working for 30 years and not 20. And so I'm trying to address the root cause of it instead of some of the secondary causes. And I'm not sure that that's going to happen real quickly, but boy, we need to go in that direction, in my opinion. Vice Mayor.
And Mayor, I completely agree with you on that, but let's make it really clear, and you said it, but I want to make it really clear to everybody. We're not talking about people who are currently in the system. People who are currently in the system would be grandfathered into the system. We're talking about people who are new hires into the system. I know it makes everybody nervous when we start talking about that, but we're not talking about people who are in there. And I had this conversation with some of the police folks, and it's exactly what the mayor said. With people's lifespans increasing, you have to look at it differently, and maybe you even phase it in so that you take it to 23 years and you take it to 25 years. But I saw a statistic the other day that said that if a married couple, if one of the two people in a marriage if both of them make it to age 60, one of them statistically will make it to age 93. Now that's a heck of a statistic when you look at what was happening 100 years ago in terms of when people, you know, were projected to pass on.
Mike,
I'd like to just to comment on that a little bit to provide further thought. 20 years is just the first time that a person is eligible to retire. Many don't leave until 25, 26, 27. Realistically, all you're doing is adding to, just like you would a 401k, you're getting 2% a year for the first five and then an extra 0.5% retroactive after that period. So you're really, the 20-year period is the first time a person can go. Rarely does someone ever leave it at directly at 20. I think if you look at the average, you're probably looking at 24, 25. In my opinion, what's costing us more is the drop program. I think that's one that needs to be further looked at, and not for personnel that are there, and I'm not a subject member of a drop program, but if that's something that I worry about, the sustainability of the retirement system, because they're not paying into the system any longer once they drop. Just a thought.
Okay. Rich.
Just one budget thing. I was wondering if maybe we could get analysis of all of our bond debt and where it goes. How much of it is allocated to public safety? How much is allocated to transportation? How much? So the whole bond debt number gets broken down so we have a better understanding of what department it gets allocated to.
And Councilman, or Mayor, Councilman, you're talking about outstanding debt, not the proposed bond program, the existing debt. All city-wide debt, because that would include, do you want the utilities component, or do you just want the general obligation?
I'd like side? To get a good understanding of it all, because I'm just new here.
No, that's a good question, because a lot of times there are certain residents who make an issue about our total debt, but that usually includes the utility debt, and so we probably ought to present that so we can distinguish.
And include the correlations that some are, you know, they have revenue sources attached
right.
to them.
Correct.
So help us understand which ones have revenue sources attached to which ones are coming out of our sales tax.
Yep, we can do that. That's easy.
Let me do a follow-up on that question, because we're philosophically, there's been a switch with new city manager trying to get more enterprise accounts and have more direct correlation of the debt to the operation, to the fund balances within the subcategories of utilities and ball field and anything else we can put it to. But there's this transition period where it used to be we'd look at the debt holistically and not worry too much about which one cycled up and down and whether it had a balloon payment, because we looked at all of it as an aggregate. So we're in a transition, and it's a little tough on this transition to take some of those bumps out and do, because we haven't reissued the debt to match it up. So that's a complicated issue, but I like the direction that we're headed in to try to get it more department to department instead of holistically for the city. So in that context, if maybe your philosophy of what you're trying to do and how it's a little bit easier to have the departments report in and see their efficiency or lack of.
Thank you, Mayor. And really what we're trying to do is tie the debt service specific when it's an enterprise type operation, where we can run it more like a standalone business. That's where we're trying to associate the debt service. Now, recognizing, as you suggested, that this is a transition period. And if you notice in some of the schedules we brought to you this year, specifically in, I think, the public facilities, where like the Holcomb Stadium and golf course, we set that, we acknowledged the debt, but I didn't include it as part of their net profit loss. I set it to the side just because of to that point. But I wanted to at least begin thinking about that whole point, is that when we issue debt service related, or there's debt service payments related to an enterprise operation, then I think we need to think in those terms of what the debt costs are. So we've set it aside to recognize it, but not necessarily include it in the profit loss calculation. But thank you. And we'll continue to talk about those as we go through the enterprises and how they can stand alone. And because I think it helps, what it helps from is the, when I'm trying to hold division managers and department heads accountable, that they understand that's a component of their cost, of the cost of operations. If we're charging for those costs of services, whether it's utilities or whatever it is, that debt service should be included in the cost of that service, and that's what we're trying to get to. It's a road, we're not there. It's a process to get there.
Okay, and then the self-insurance trust fund balances, if we can make sure that those are all sufficient, and the what the coverage limits are, especially for the new councils, that would be great. And then the unfunded pension, the Gatsby aspect, I'd like to take another look at making sure that's not a looming problem out there that is unfunded, because I haven't heard an update here lately on that one.
Mayor, thank you. That's a very good question. We've talked, And I need to follow up internally as staff because I've given them some direction. Kind of to the point that Vice Mayor said is that we really need to look at the next generation of employees that will come into the city and how we will define those post-benefit benefits to them and how they will probably change from what is in place today. Because that's just that is a significant number that it shows up now on our rating agencies and our, I believe, is it in the CAFR now required, the open required? So it becomes significant that we've had to track this number before that we didn't have before. The only issue I would say is at this point, there hasn't necessarily been any direction or guidance from either the GADSB, which is kind of the national standards board for governmental accounting, or even from our rating agencies, although we have a rating agency meeting next week, so maybe we'll get some. But there are other cities that are moving forward and helping to redefine those benefits, post-employment benefits. So I think it helps to, you don't want to move too far out of there and not be competitive with other cities. And some of the larger cities have already started moving in that direction, so that's going to help us define our benefits, and we can certainly bring that forward.
Okay. Mike?
Just along the lines of Tom and Claudia's suggestion on the TRVs, I think, you know, we had talked about implementing a false alarm fine for false fire alarms. There may be substantial money within that enterprise to help fund that offset too.
Okay. Bill?
One of the things that I learned in my early days here was the large amount of funding we're having to do to make up for stock market things that happened years and years ago in the public safety funds.
You go ahead.
Well, yeah, I don't know that I'm asking for a response yet.
Yeah.
But my understanding is that because of events that happened way back here, this year we're putting all this extra money into that account.
Right.
And I understand that that's a state law. It's one of these things that maybe
state
you want...
run pension, yeah.
Yeah, maybe you want to go fix. But the other thing, my question is, I doubt that we'll ever get that fixed wherever we had to go get that fixed. But is there not a way that we couldn't internally create some sort of floating fund balance or something to take these peaks and spikes mm-hmm. out? And that would be my question. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, or out of some fund reserves or other places, no. Recognizing that these things are going to go up and down and up and down in some way to smooth those out. Because, you know, it's like the perfect storm this year. Everything that bad is happening is all happening in the same year.
No, thank you, Councilman Truitt. I would say to you, that's one of the things we have tried to do is we have fairly significant fund balances, reserves in place. The pension hit this year was fairly unique for us. We haven't seen, I have my short history, but maybe a longer history, we haven't seen those kind of hits. But we do have reserves in place that we require to carry that 10% fund balance requirement. We actually, in many cases, meet or exceed that in some cases. Unfortunately, though, the pressures that are being put upon us with a decline in the sales tax, that's going to be a challenge for us in the future. But, Chuck, do you want to talk more about that, the number? What have we typically seen that number at as far as the pension contributions?
Well,
from the
high used to be maybe a 9-10%. This year it was like 36% or 34%. I'm going back in my memory here. But that was a very significant hit. I think what you described it very well, a perfect storm. This year we're looking at $20 million hit to the general fund. It is very hard to justify us putting away that huge sum of money when there's needs on your policy direction to go forward. So that's why we've gone to that 8-10% to manage it. This year was a significant hit, and now we're having to adjust, but that's how we try to manage going forward. That'd be the best thing. What they're trying to do on this pension issue in the future is, this has been an issue with all the cities, is they're discussing with that retirement board how they can better manage these kind of increases and the lateness of the impact to the cities.
I guess, the way I understood it, this was stuff related to things that happened back in 2001 in the stock market. So it seems like somebody could have seen this perfect storm coming.
I think you're right. And I think that's why the cities have now gotten a little more active with the pension board and saying, you know, you can't try to make it up like this. You should have been either bringing in over time. I guess they have fixed commitments, Brian, is that what it is, to pensions, and they had to make up the actuarial amount to get to the pension?
Right, and there's some new guidelines that are requiring them to become fully funded within, I think, 3 more years.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that. We've seen increases like this on the civilian side over the past several years, and that has moderated this year because they've caught up. So hopefully this aggressive process of catching up on the public safety side won't continue, but they do need it to in order to meet some federal requirements in order to be fully funded.
Okay. Well, my basic question is, do we need to be doing something at our level because they're not doing it properly at their level? So I think that's the real philosophical question.
Okay. Mike?
The run-up, Darrell, I think they took advantage of the run-up in the stock market in the late 90s, and they were doing really well, and the thing was completely fully funded until the crash of 2001. It's what happened in Southern California, and their pension funds went broke because of probably improper management. Once again, when you drop, you don't pay into the system, but you're an employee and you're still within the system. We're not having to pay the 8% or 10%. They're not having to pay the 8 or 10%. There's not enough people contributing to the system. So that also impacts the future viability of the system.
My only question is, what do we do to insulate ourselves from these outside external forces and so that we don't have happen to us again what we had happen to us this year?
It's our fund balance, and that's what our fund balance
reserves are for.
Okay. Other questions on this? Vice Mayor.
Yeah, I think part of what we do is what we're doing, which is we go and work with them, because I agree with you. And Mike, maybe it's time to go back and start talking about that drop program again. I will tell you that was sold to us as a way of not having increased costs, of being able to take advantage of experience. And now that we have some experience, once again, I'm not talking about people who are currently in the system, but I think we've got to look at that again. That cost just is not turning out to be what it was sold as. And we aren't the only city who's seeing that. So I think we're going to, we need to talk about that. And I'm looking at our guys who deal at the state level back there and looking at them and saying we need to talk with everybody on that. The other issue that I think we should talk about here, because we have so many people who are coming in who haven't been through the last however many years with us, I think we need to talk about the bond rating agencies, how those decisions are made, and what we have done on these fund balances. Because, Chris, we have really made some significant inroads into improving our bond rating. And it has been a painful process to go through, but an essential process. And I want to make sure everybody's aware of that. It can be tempting to look at those fund balances and think, oh, I can go and spend money on my favorite program over here or over here, and not recognize what the long-term consequence of that is.
Right. And when will this information and the final wrap-ups?
Mayor, we have several others that you've brought up in the past that we want to bring back, and we would like to try to set aside time next week to do that. And we'll try to get as far along in our responses as we can for next week. I think we've scheduled next week, the next two Thursdays, calendar in front of me, because I think we would like to try to get this wrapped up. Is that your date? The 8th really would be our preference to get the final direction, because that's getting pretty close to the time that we have to begin putting together the physical proposed budget so that it'll be available for publication, and then getting it onto the council agenda for June 2nd. Am I saying that right, Chuck? Are you comfortable with those times?
Okay. Yes, sir.
You will have, on May 15th, we'll bring the human services funding, that'll come back to the council. That's the one piece that's still sitting out there that needs to come back to council from the committee that's reviewing that. So,
June 2nd is the maximum budget?
Right.
So you set the
10.
Okay. All right. And final adoption is?
The 23rd.
The 23rd?
Yeah. As we've reminded the council-elect, that really only gives us June 5th. To begin to make changes for the proposed budget, because I believe we have to advertise that following the Saturdays after that. I can't remember what the
really it's a matter of getting that 3-page legal document ready before presentation and getting it all through the whole process.
So they have from the 2nd to the 5th?
Correct. We know what we're doing on the 5th.
No problem.
Kyle. And this is the last time it'll happen this way because our elections will change so that the council members will have half a year to get geared up instead of 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Or yeah. 2 days. 2 days.
3 days. 3 days.
3 days.
Yeah, 2 weeks.
Okay. All right. Appreciate the information on that one. Let's go to item number 5. Here reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. Last night I had the opportunity, along with several other people from the city, to attend the Governor's Arts Award Banquet, and it's appropriate that we have Councilmember-elect Dennis Kavanaugh sitting here with us because he was the recipient of the Shelley Award, which is the top award in the state for someone who has been an advocate for the arts. And only one person gets that a year, and Dennis Kavanaugh got it for his history of over 20 years of being an advocate for the arts, both in Mesa and statewide, and it was wonderful to be there. Councilmember-elect Richens was there as well, along with some other, a lot of people who stood up to give Dennis a standing ovation. So congratulations, Dennis.
Kyle?
Yesterday, I was over at the Courtyard Towers where they had an appreciation breakfast for police and fire to thank them for all the service and making their neighborhood safe and the help they have, and it was a nice little event, and thank them for putting that on, and we do truly appreciate our public safety individuals. I also need to announce a reminder that this Saturday morning at from 8 to 10, we're hosting a breakfast at station number 1 at Mesa Drive and 1st Street for residents of District 4 to come out and join us and have questions answered, talk to city staff. Hope to see you there.
Okay.
It says conference is attended. That's future.
Still.
Thank you, everybody. Apparently my presence was missed at the meeting, according to what the newspaper said yesterday in the headlines. But my daughter was given an award as Golden Scholar. My son received it the week before. So that required my attendance. She got straight A's. You got to show up for those types of things. Attended the Williams Gateway Airport Board Authority meeting on Monday. We've discussed the strategic plan, particularly with the balance of cargo versus passenger aircraft. We also were very encouraged to work with Queen Creek. Mayor Gilbert expressed his support for Queen Creek to make sure that their updated general plan comes in line with what's going on with the airport. I also offered my support to the mayor down in Queen Creek as well, and he's been working quite hard to try to make sure that their general plan, just like we are here in Mesa, their general plan fits in what's going on at the airport. And yesterday, last night, Mike Whale and I attended the volunteer appreciation dinner for the Mesa Fire Department. They had one gentleman there, 91 years old, volunteering for 10 years, does all their filing. So appreciate all the volunteer work. As a firefighter myself, I know a lot of, I'm a beneficiary of some of the hard work that they put in for connecting our customers to extended needs with after the fire, or after the medical event. So they save us quite a bit of money and help with the firefighters. So thank you.
Just amazing to think that just in the fire department alone, there's over 7,000 hours of volunteer service in the last year. It was huge, which saves us about $600,000. That's almost enough for a TRV.
Right. There's been some discussion with the Queen Creek Master Plan, and I think there's been a copy of a letter that I sent to Mayor Sanders expressing some questions on their master plan. So you'll have a copy of that if you haven't already received it. I was at the MAG TPC, a joint meeting last night over in Phoenix, where the biggest topic was supposed to be the $42 billion of 1 cent sales tax for 30 years. It's going to be probably on a November ballot if it moves forward with the Time Coalition. That will be something that this council and the budget people, when the projects and the dollar magnitudes are outlined and we get more specifics on that, that could have another impact, because
I think they were like 45% of the highway projects would be coming into this region of the funding for them. There's other categories for different transit, and but those seem to be a prioritization within the councils of government. But there's some significant dollar magnitudes involved in that that I think will have, if it does pass, have a positive impact on the transportation-related budgets for all the cities around the state. I'm not sure it'll have the same impact as your contribution from a one-cent sales tax being imposed on our residents. I think we'll still end up being a donor, but it's, again, it's for statewide transportation. So you're some of the I-10, I-17, maybe commuter rail, some of those programs. At this point, they are all potential projects recommended. There is no list of projects that I could come up with time frames, dates to implement, and dollar magnitude. So we have asked for that question to be answered as specific as possible so we can model the program to see what it'll do with congestion. The other one is there's a wastewater treatment facility up by the Fort McDowell that we are weighing in on, and that was delayed for 30 days under a very interesting discussion, which took almost an hour, calling a weighted vote on an issue that didn't pass on a weighted vote, and some other issues that typically don't take place. But our one of our supervisors, Supervisor Stapley, has taken a pretty significant interest in this, and so we'll see where that comes back. But that will be back in 30 days. So, but I would, I don't want to say caution, but I would encourage the new council to get fully engaged on this statewide transportation issue, because it's a one-cent sales tax. It looks like that's what it's going to be for 30 years. So it limits a little bit what we can do as a council to implement a public safety sales tax or something else, because it's going to kind of preempt that ability to take place. So whether you're in favor of it or not, and whether you get enough benefits for implementing it and supporting it, will be something that I think you really have to think through and have that type of discussion. So that was my meeting last night. Sorry I missed your event, Dennis. All right. Anyone else? All right, scheduling meetings, general information.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a reminder, our next study session will be May 1st at 7:30, and our next study session and council meeting will be May 5th. Also want to let the council know we're, Mesa's getting a lot of national attention. We have a lot of national celebrities out there right now on the national TV. And Brooke White apparently made it through this past week on American Idol. That's good. And there are events at Dana Park, I think, every time that's on, and supporting her. So that's good. That's in Mesa. And also want to remind the council of this Saturday's Fit City event at the Holcomb Stadium, where Allie Vincent, this year's winner of the Biggest Losers TV show, will be there with her mother, Betty Sue. So we're very excited that they're going to be here to support our Fit City event in Mesa. So show up, be there.
I may have my genealogy here wrong, but I think that this young lady is the granddaughter of a now deceased Mesa City Council member. If I'll have to check on that, but I everybody's looking around. Nobody knows for sure, but I'll check on it before I make
that. Okay, great. Anyway, we're looking forward to a great weekend. Thank you.
All right. Are there any requests to speak?
No requests, Mayor.
Okay. Let's go ahead and adjourn the study session, and I need to convene a special council meeting.
Move.
All right. And then I need a motion to enter into an executive session.
Oh, okay. So moved.
All right.
Okay. We need a vote.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Opposed? All right. Thank you.